Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 5-9 of the Fan, J.D. Blake and Ailish. Huh. They did it again. But this time it's different. Was the last dance the last dance? Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider and co-host of 32 Thoughts, the podcast, analyst for Hockey Night in Canada. Of course, this insider... The Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Good morning, Elliot. Thanks for jumping on, man.
No problem, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. So, we spoke earlier this season, and we actually discussed the potential of a loss exactly like this. Do you recall the conversation?
No, I don't. I don't recall a lot of things lately, so you'll have to refresh my memory.
Well, no, it's just, this is it, is that we talked about this scenario when we both kind of came to this conclusion of how, like, difficult that would be if it played out this way. And it played out the hardest way to evaluate moving forward ever. I watched you on the panel directly after where, you gave a quick opinion. I'm curious if you feel like there's any kind of sentiment or vibe that has come out from the Toronto Maple Leafs in the wake of this latest loss in terms of, like, what could be on the table here.
A little bit, not a lot. I mean, obviously they haven't spoken yet, and we'll see what happens when they do. But there is some vibe check. I think the thing is, like, is pretty clear to me that a lot of the fan base doesn't necessarily feel similar to the way I did. My reaction to what happened this year was, I thought the previous three defeats, the second one to Boston, the one to Columbus, the one to Montreal, were incredibly disappointing. Series that Toronto should have all won. And losses that in some cases more than others were quite frankly not acceptable, unfortunately. I didn't think this one was as bad. I actually thought, they took the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions to one goal in Game 7. I didn't think this was a quote-unquote bad defeat like the previous three. However, I think there's a lot of people who look at it like it's six in a row. And, that stat's been quoted everywhere now. The first team in those different sports to lose five deciding games in a row. And I think that... Well, I look at kind of this year as a separate entity. There's a lot of people who say, look, in life, if you fail at something six times, you have to do something different. And there were people I knew who were at that game on the weekend, and some other friends who were huge Leaf fans, and they just said the overall attitude of the fan base is one of anger and disappointment. So I can look at it one way, but if you're fan base is that the other way, then it's the kind of thing that could force you into acting. I've thought a lot about it in the 24 to how many ever hours it is, 36 hours since the defeat happened. And, I've kind of thought about some ways where I think they might proceed.
I will just say that I think that's a very measured way of looking at this. And it's why most of the people that I've spoken to, even lifelong fans to casuals, to people that we've solicited opinions from, I do think that people are trying to balance those two things out, Elliot. Like, you can't tell me that didn't feel different as a Leafs fan to a certain degree. Like, the team acquitted themselves much better in years past. I guess the issue that I have with it is, like, how do you ignore those things despite them looking good in this, right? Because the entire season was about killer instinct, killer instinct, killer instinct. And even though the core was so much better, they still started games 4, 5, 6, and 7 down, right? They didn't get the first goal of the game. And I don't know if you felt this as well, but that building, what I read more into it in that game seven was it just felt a little tight when the Leafs didn't get the first goal. And the amount of people that said to me, Toronto need to score first, that's the take I think I've agreed with more than any universal take in the history of sports. Like, I agree. They needed to grab that first lead. And I guess kind of where you go from that is, yeah, like, killer instinct. Like, if you're looking at the two things, the core acquitted themselves better, but if you lose and the season was about killer instinct, how do you move that one moving forward? How do you not kind of have that fear of, well, you can't have that happen again, the tightness happen again?
You know, this is not a sentence I say very often, but JD, I completely agree with you.
Clip that.
They needed to score first. There's no question about it. That said, I've never seen a team. Sorry, I shouldn't say never. I've rarely seen a Toronto team, Maple Leafs team, handle itself so well when it didn't score first.
Yeah.
Twice in games 5 and 6, they came back from 2-0 deficits in games I thought they were completely doomed. However, you know, they came back in game 7 from being down 1-0 and having the goal disallowed. And they were kind of, even though they didn't get a ton of shots, because Tampa are experts on defense, I thought they carried the play for a lot of the third period in game 7. But I do think that a lot of this is between the ears, which makes it a really challenging way for them to go forward. I do think they're going to make changes. I do think they're going to look at some things. But I do think that one of the things I think they have to do is, you know, they've brought a lot of really good veterans in, but a lot of them are veterans who don't play a huge role. And I think that they've actually made some really good choices in some of the players they've bought in. But I wonder if they just have to bring in somebody who plays a major, try to find somebody who plays a major role who is just an absolute jerk to play against. And I'm talking, I wonder if it's somebody who can maybe play. Like, Bunting is a little bit of that. I think you even have to look for more of it, and it's somebody who can play with a Matthews or a Tavares. I actually think the biggest offseason question they have is, what is Tavares' future going to be in terms of where he plays? He's still a really good face-off player. He still produces a very high level of points, but he's slowing down. And I'm not sure that he's going to be able to play center for much longer. And I look at that and I say, okay, there's two ways of looking at this. You can split Marner and Matthews up and have them both play center, or you might need to go find another top six center. And I look at who that person might potentially be, and I'm just wondering, are you going to have to bring in somebody who's an even better player at this point in their career than some of those other players were? And, you know, they're going to be someone who drives the attitude of your team. I do think a lot of this, JD, is between the ears.
And that's Elliot, that's a really tough thing to navigate, because you're talking about, then you have two $11 million wingers at that point. And where is the space coming from? What is the asset cost of a guy like that? Where is the cap space coming from for a guy like that? It's a tough offseason. I want to zoom out a little bit, because the first of these dominoes that has to fall is, who is it making these decisions? And I'm not setting that up to advocate, like, oh, they have to make a change in the front office. But as I understand it, Kyle Dubas's contract is about to expire.
I think he's got one more year.
Oh, okay. There was a lot of Twitter stuff yesterday that his contract was up. Well, that's easier then. But you assume that he's the guy making making those decisions the rest of this offseason still?
I do. The immediate sense I got was that I think he's going to be back. Yes.
Okay,
it doesn't surprise me. I really think that I think the bigger question is going to be, like, what do they do about, like, does he get extended or not? I think that's going to be one of the questions. Does he go into next year on the last year of his deal?
Because that's tough if you're making long-term moves as a lame duck.
I generally feel that they felt this year that the organization felt this year that he found a lot of good pieces. Now, the biggest challenge he's going to have is trying to extricate himself from Mrazek, if that's what they choose to do. And that will be a big challenge. But I think generally a lot of his acquisitions this year turned out to be pretty good. And the one other one that didn't work, Richie, he found a way to extricate himself from that in terms of the cap space.
So if we're assuming that, or we believe that it's more likely the front office returns, when we're saying, because earlier when you talked about they're going to make changes, where do you think they look to make those changes first?
Well, I mean, again, if it's up to Dubas, I would expect Keith to return. Mm-hmm. I think these are going to be, I think the changes this year are going to be roster related.
So if they're roster related, you mentioned a guy that could play up the lineup. I don't want to misquote you, but I think that it was more of an opinion, not a report. But I think you had mentioned JT Miller around the deadline. Is that right? Like that the Leafs, you thought
yeah,
that he'd
I
be
did.
An interesting
I,
name for them? Not that they were I looking, didn't. But that he was interesting.
I thought, like, I think that is the kind of player that they, you know, I think he is the kind of player they could really use. Like, I think they called the Canucks about Miller. I think there was some interest, but I don't think it really went that far. I just don't think it was a deal that was likely to be made at the time. I'm not even sure how likely it would be now, to be honest. Okay. But I do think that's the kind of player they should be looking for.
So when we look at the Leafs cap sheet and how they might go about adding it and who might need to be removed if you're going to add elsewhere, do you get a sense that other teams look at this situation in a kind of a predatory fashion where, hey, they're going to get a lot of low ball calls on, say, a William Nylander because it takes $7 million off the cap and it is a change. And I know that if this front office stays in place, they won't make changes for the sake of making changes, but there will be, I think, a perception that they need to make changes. Do you get the sense that other teams will try to be predatory and, you know, knock on the door a little bit and see how strong the resolve is to keep the core together here?
Well, I think that's what other teams are inclined to do is mm-hmm. try to be predatory about, you know, what trying if Toronto's looking to be vulnerable, if Toronto's looking to make moves, of course they're going to try to heist you. That's their jobs. I do wonder, you know, we taped the podcast last night. It's dropping at some point today. I do think this could be Dubas's, for lack of a better phrase, Blake, his summer of Kawhi or summer of DeRozan. I do think he will try to do something big, potentially. We'll see what he says when they have their availabilities, but they... You know, they last year they put belief in their group, and you know, again, even though I thought they were better, it still didn't happen. And I think he will. I don't necessarily think he's going to do something that enormous, but I think he will consider it.
Elliot, if he learned anything from the Kawhi thing, he's just going to straight up lie about it at this end of season media availability, though.
Sometimes it happens. We deal with it in this business all the time. That's the way it goes. Generally, I think Dubas is pretty honest. Like I think every general manager in sports lies from time to time, but generally I think Dubas tells you a lot of what he's going to do, if not specific things. He outlines what he's thinking, and I would expect that he will do that. You know, like I think if you look at their roster, you know, I think there's certain guys who he wouldn't trade, but I don't think there's probably going to be a lot of them. And also the other thing, I wouldn't be surprised if they've already gone down the road with Giordano about coming back. I think if he's willing to come back for a low number, I wouldn't be surprised if that gets finalized too.
Yeah. Okay. So again, we're speaking to Elliot Friedman, a new 32 Thoughts. Dropping later today, where you can hear more about what a Kawhi offseason looks like. So when we're looking at this stuff, I think that you always like to hear that, hey, a general manager is going to consider everything, especially after this many times through the ringer. Like, one of the things that I think you give Kyle Dubas credit for is that he has evolved as a general manager, right? Like, even in his honesty, going from we can and we will to some of those early contracts, looking at one way to win to a different approach has been very clear with him. I am curious, though, so you mentioned the Giordano thing, right? Okay, they'd like to bring him back at a cheap number. There's always been the speculation that he could become, you know, blue line Spezza, for a lack of a better way of putting it. Okay, well, you have two defensemen that are RFAs in Timothy Liljegren and Sandin, who look like long-term future pieces. You just gave Morgan Rielly a big contract. Where do you see kind of the balance of this blue line shaking out then? Like, do you see a particularly – is there one name on the blue line right now that interests you more than others in terms of potential movement?
That's a good question. Well, judging from the way that they felt about Sandin before he was injured, I think he's a big part of their future. Okay. I tend to think that Liljegren still is too. He got taken out of the lineup. But I don't think that, you know, they're a group that would say, okay, we took him out of the lineup now, but we, you know, we're never putting him back in. I would have to think they will continue to try to move Hall. You know, even though he played the last five games of the series, I would think that that's something they're going to continue to try to do. I think the other thing, too, is, you know, Muzzin just had a really tough end to the season. I think if he gets back and gets healthy, you know, I still think he's a big part of their plans. I think the thing they try to do is what they tried to do this year. See if they can get Hall moved, because A, I think he needs a fresh start, and B, he's got a chunk of change there at $2 million that you could really use. So that would be the guy that I would look at.
So you have that $2 million floating around possibly on the back end if you can get rid of Hall. What do you think the contracts would look like for a Sandin or Liljegren in the meantime, trying to keep those guys in the lineup?
Those are probably a little less than that number. I think the biggest – well, if you're doing short term, you know, Ailish, I think that what you're looking at here is you're trying to is the term that these players are talking about. I think that the toughest thing that will happen is those players probably wouldn't be interested in signing for a long term unless you really bumped up the number. So I think that those numbers are probably in and around what Hall makes now. I would say Sandin's case for a bigger number is better than Liljegren's, but I don't necessarily think you're breaking the bank right now unless you're offering them a big, big extension.
I mean, that actually seems pretty feasible, which is something we hadn't really predicted. But how much of this is riding on Jack Campbell's contract first? Is that the major domino for you that needs to fall before all this gets into place?
Well, I think what to me, the, I mean, obviously Campbell's going to be a big priority for them. And they, for most of the year, unless there were big, big strides made privately at the end, for a lot of the year, they really weren't in the same ballpark from what Campbell's people were thinking. Like, you know, basically, I heard that, you know, Toronto's initial offer to Campbell was a 3-year deal, probably around $275 million, I think. It was less than what Mrazek made. Campbell's biggest initial offer, I think, was much greater than that. They realized there wasn't a lot of common ground. And, you know, it got shelved. And like I said, unless there were some big strides made privately that no one's aware of, which is always possible, I don't think they were very close. And, you know, to me, you know, I don't think there's a lot of, you know, we're at a point right now where we might have had a situation where there's less number one stud goaltenders who really impact a game or a series than there have been maybe in my lifetime. I think the group of 1A goaltenders is really dropping. And also we're in an era where teams are saying the goalie starting between 65 and 75 games, it's not happening anymore. So the dynamics of the overall position are changing. If you have to replace Campbell, there's no you're going to be probably going with someone you don't know as well, and B, like I would feel pretty comfortable with him based on what I've seen of him compared to a lot of other options you're going to get. And so, I mean, that's, I think they've got a lot of balls in the air. They've got some time to sort this out before Campbell hits free agency. They've got 2 months. They'll know well before that if they're going to be able to keep him or not. But I don't think it's necessary. It's a big decision, Ailish, but I think the biggest decision, number one, I think the biggest decision is what's Tavares' future role going to be in terms of where he plays and how do you build around that? And number two, who else is going from your roster? Because that could create your cap room for you.
Boy, trying to find two other centermen feels like a tall task for a roster.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I really wonder, and that's one of the things I'm curious about. I had this debate with a few people yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is your future, maybe, JD, that Marner and Matthews are both centers?
I love that. I'm a natural. I want my centerman to be bigger, and I've never even thought of that. So I'm very caught off guard by it. But it's interesting. My one thing would be, you definitely can't do it with Nylander because you tried that already, and it mm-hmm. didn't really appear to work. But yeah, what would be the number one trait that you would be looking for in terms of what you would believe that would make a good fit for him? And would you be concerned at all about Matthews' future? Because I think, again, this was something you brought up, is this is the last year before you can extend Matthews. And yep. I wonder how much of their future plans are, okay, we need to win, clearly, but also, does this guy have a different level of power within this organization, given that he is so incredibly important to everything that they do?
Well, he's got huge leverage. There's no question about that. I think they want to keep him, and I think there's, like, I have believed for a little bit of time now that as long as the team is good, there's a decent chance he's going to stay. I'm sure they will run some of their thinking through him, not all of it, but I think they will order, they will talk some of it. I mean, ultimately, there's a lot of time between now and next summer. I love Phil Esposito's line, we could all be hit by buses. I think they'll know Matthews' intentions or have a good idea of them next summer, and they'll proceed accordingly. All you can do right now is worry about next season. And like I said, I had this debate with a few people yesterday about, what they should do. And, there were one or two people who didn't like the idea of Marner playing center because they thought, hey, is he big or strong enough to withstand it? And I had a lot of people who told me that that's a ridiculous thought, that the kid has proven he's not afraid of playing tough down low. He kills penalties. Like, this is, it maybe not be the biggest guy, but they don't worry about, like, and also Tavares can take draws on one side of the ice, which he's very good at. They think that the Marner size thing is not a reason not to play him at center. So, I mean, like I said, I wonder if that becomes, now, what do you lose? You lose a combination that has Matthews scoring 60 goals and Marner in the top five at points. And that could affect, obviously, your offense. But I think we're in a case where the Maple Leafs are going to have to think differently. And maybe that's one. And centermen are hard to find. And I do think the Tavares situation is going to push you in this direction. So, I mean, it's just an idea, but it's one of the things I'm wondering about.
I love it. I love outside the box thinking, as always, and I can't wait to ask Christopher Stieg that question when he jumps on next. As a guy who, usually has a lot of thoughts on Marner and his career. Elliot, we always appreciate it. There was a ton that you gave us today. We very much appreciate it.
All right, now I'm going back to bed.
Okay, enjoy your sleep.
All right, guys, take care.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet Insider, co-host of 32 Thoughts. And, of course, analysts on Hockey Night in Canada. And that insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Some of those contracts, I think, are so interesting. I think if you're the Leafs, you're thrilled if you can get Sandin and Liljegren at numbers lower than Hall. I had always kind of just assumed that Liljegren would be lower out of the two and that he'd be kind of hovering just barely, like 1.2 mil was kind of would be my guess at that, whereas Sandin would have probably cracked two or been right at the two. That would be nice. The Jack Campbell thing, though, is the big one there, though, where he says, like, that's the offer, is that you were that far off. Like, Kipper just said that maybe he wants five. I don't know if he'll get up that high because of what Elliott said about 1A goaltenders, but the thing there is if I'm Jack Campbell's camp, I'm going, do you really want to go out into the wilderness and try to find something that you don't know works when you know this does? You know your room likes Jack Campbell. You know that the market likes Jack Campbell. You know that Jack Campbell has now had two straight playoffs with your team where he was not the problem. And frankly, with this team, that's what you're looking for. You guys haven't developed goaltenders. You've got nothing in behind him other than Mrazek's contract to move. Like, this is really a up to Jack Campbell situation here. He has leverage. He has a lot of leverage. And I'm not sure. It's like 2.75 is borderline disrespectful. Like,
yeah,
it's bad. I would go even past borderline.
Yeah, it's
he's a nice guy, but he's not just gonna like take that and be like, yeah, oh, I'm very happy with this, I'll stay. Like,
but no, if he takes
not
less
on
than
the
four,
that's that not on the border of disrespectful. That has a nexus pass that skipped the lines that went right to disrespectful.
I agree with Elliot in the sense of there are so many different interesting points of fascination with this roster. I hadn't thought about the Marner thing, Tavares moving the wing, all that different stuff. That would be the question they asked Tavares. But I'm still with you on this, Ailish, that the first major domino still to me is like, what are you going to do with Jack Campbell? How much are you going to pay him? Because going out and trying to find two brand new goaltenders or the idea of you're bringing in Mrazek as one of your two goaltenders, that doesn't seem too hot. That doesn't seem so great. Christopher Stieg has won two Stanley Cups. He knows about Killer Instinct. He'll know about, I know he has some controversial opinions because he's texted them to me. So he'll share those publicly next.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, JD, Blake, and Ailish. Yeah, that song that just played you in is Pup. Blake and I were there last night at the show. Blake did the double dip. I felt hurt when the band on stage said, I see some of you pit dads out there. And I went, I have no children, and I'm still in a mosh pit, and I'm old, and that felt bad. But other than
now, honestly, though, from up on stage, though, they probably thought, like, I was your pit dad.
Yeah.
I look old from far away. Yeah, you look young from far away.
I
was, like, a couple rows back from you in the safer part because I was on night two and I'm feeling old at the end of a second show in a row.
I tried to mosh out the bad feelings, and it worked for a while. It did, but as all drugs do, they're temporary. Now we're back to reality. The Leafs are out. Our next guest is here to, I don't know, make it worse probably. Christopher Stieg, former NHL forward, two-time Stanley Cup champion, founder and CEO of the Clever app, which again, an excellent app. Please go check it out. If you've got kids in sports, or you got your coaching, whatever, I implore you to go check it out because it is a really good one. Christopher Stieg, good morning, buddy. What's up?
Are you calling me about the Battle of Alberta? Is this what this is about today?
Your Oilers, you know, you're big Oilers guy. You're good. This is good. This is high stakes for you. You know, like what happens if McDavid gets shut down this time?
Yeah, I don't know. It won't be good. And listen, I might be leaning towards the Flames.
No, right? You're such a like leaning towards the Flames in what way? Like you think they're going to win the series?
Well, I played there. It's a little bit closer to Lethbridge. There's slightly more fans in Lethbridge from, you know, Calgary fans. So I don't want to go back and have my house burnt down.
Well, here's the thing. That's what I was going to say. You're a neutral party. Like, it's nice that you played for the Flames and that you get to play that card. That's a good one for you. But we all know. Like, anybody who knows you as well.
Be quiet.
Yeah, where your allegiances lie. All right, so you shared some spicy takes with me. I got some spicy questions for you later in this interview, but what was your – like, they lost, and they lost in a game seven, and it was different but the same, and all day long it's just been, well, what do you do if it was that close and that good? And I guess this is kind of an open-ended one, but, yeah, where do you begin as a team, as an off season, when you finish that way?
100%. Coaching was terrible. And I don't even know if I have to come out of coaching minor hockey to open-ended give my application back to coach Toronto Maple Leafs to get them out of the first round. I will, JD, if I have to. But I'm telling you, the coaching was terrible. You are telling me that, so if I look at the entire game and the entire series, cross-corner dump. When in the NHL is a cross-corner dump at a 50-50 puck a good thing? You're just turning the puck over. You get the puck. You take on water time and time again. The third period, they didn't make one hard rim. They weren't going in there, chipping at them themselves, and they wouldn't sustain pressure. I look at the back end. You're telling me Muzzin and Giordano can only play 19 minutes in a Game 7? Game 7. I don't care if Labushkin plays 1 minute or if Hall plays 1 minute. You ride your horses in a Game 7 to win. They did not do that. They played them 19 minutes in a Game 7. Spezza, I'm going to keep going down the list. Spezza, he can only play 3.5 minutes throughout the game, 1 minute of that in power play, and then all of a sudden he can play the final 4 minutes. Do you know how hard it is to be 40 years old, sit an entire game, and then be expected to score a goal at the end of a game? Pierre Engvall didn't do a thing all series. Why does he stay in that slot? Why can't Blackwell go up? Why can't Spezza move into that slot? Why can't you change things up? Horrible coaching. Horrible coaching. That is 100% the reason why they lost.
I'm glad you did this because, one, is that you come from an educated place like you are. Yeah, a coach, and you have played, and you watch the game differently than a lot of us. Because, like, again, most people, when they say fire the coach, they're looking at it through my lens, which is, well, you just need a different voice in the room. Like, you need a different communicator. You're actually putting it into practical applications that are not just what the line combination should have been or what fourth liner should have been in the lineup come what time, or Labushkin versus Liljegren. But, yeah.
Here's another thing that was infuriating. Sorry to cut you off here. Well, actually, I'm not sorry. It's you, JD. Yeah. But anyways,
all right.
Kyle Clifford. Okay, you're going to play Andre Kasha 6 to 8 minutes a game. Yeah. It's like putting me on the fourth line. I'm useless. Yeah. 6 to 8 minutes a game. You put a skill guy. Why can't Kyle Clifford go in and bang some bodies around? Yeah. You know, okay, he took the penalty in game one. Whatever. He sat out game two, game three. Let him come back in. Let him play his role. He's a guy that can go up the lineup. He's a guy that could go in for Pierre Engvall, because Pierre Engvall didn't hit anyone all series. Mm-hmm. Right? I know he had a couple of assists, a couple second assists, but for me, Pierre Engvall, put him on the fourth line. Let him get angry. Let him come back to the third line. Move guys around in game, but he's not thinking on the fly. It's just stagnant. Oh, put this line out. Put this line out. Oh, last 4 minutes. Let's just put Spezza out for 4 minutes straight, even though he's 40 years old and sat on the bench the whole game. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. Like, you can't do that. But again, just the way they're going about it. So a fourth line, Andre Kasha, then he maybe get on the power play. Sometimes he wouldn't. You know, it's like, what are you doing? That's for me. It's like the Tampa Bay Lightning were not a good team this series. They were not that good.
Yeah,
and Kucherov, I don't even think tried. I don't even think he tried the entire series.
I think Kucherov wanted to go home at some points in that series. Like, I actually had thoughts where I went, is this guy tired and he wants vacation? And he's like, I have two cups. I'm ready to have some.
Don't
R&R,
get paid extra in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's fine.
Pack
he's
it
rich.
Up.
He's doing.
How about the open net on the one timer he had in the was it overtime? Mm-hmm. He could have took that one timer, ended the game, and he passes it to slot because he's just not into the game. Yeah. When Kucherov's in the game, he's hammering that puck, or he's creating more plays. He's moving it. He didn't even try the whole series, and then they didn't even have a point. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's just constant. Again, everyone's like, oh, man, it's the defense. We only need to get Giordano 19 minutes or, you know, Muzzin. Dude, break the chains. Throw your horses out. Live and die with your horses. Like, these guys can play more than 19 minutes. These are fit athletes. These are really fit athletes. The top guys can play 22, 23, 24 minutes. You know, you can, especially in a game seven, you're trying to catch up. Justin Hall couldn't even, like, he didn't have a great game seven. Nothing against Justin Hall. I think he can be serviceable, but, like, you're trying to score a goal. You're trying to come back. And I haven't even gotten to the fans yet. So it was just painful.
I don't want you to get to the fans just yet, all right? Like, hold on. Let's just stick with this because this is great. This is good because this is actual, like, stuff that's on the ice. And you're vocalizing, I think, to a lot of different people who are frustrated right now because basically the messaging has been it looks like everything is going to stay the same-ish in terms of, hey, if it's going to be Kyle Dubas who returns, well, Kyle Dubas's guy is Sheldon Keefe. And so if Dubas is back, it's hard for me to envision that he ends up moving off of the guy that he brought up and the coach that he likes. And so, yeah, all right, you're going to keep that stuff. There could be some roster movement that ends up happening. But the thing you touched on there with Engvall and those forwards, I think that's the biggest issue for me in terms of the roster construction is that it's just like, hey, these guys need more depth impact players, more guys that do something. And I like the third line if you're trying to protect a lead. That's always been a very like strong suit of theirs is like those guys can go out and give you penalty kill with Kampf and Engvall and Mikheyev. But when you needed a goal, you felt like you were flat and you felt like your fourth line didn't really give you anything. Like they didn't bang bodies, they didn't score, they didn't really do much for you. I am kind of curious as to, Blake, you got some?
Well, I was just going to say, these two things go hand in hand, right? We're talking about how the depth didn't come through and the third and fourth line didn't contribute the way you want. And Chris's point about ride your horses more, Austin Matthews averages less ice time in that series than he has since the playoff series when he was 21 years old, 3 minutes fewer per game than 2019-2020. Like, pick a lane. Either your depth is contributing and you're leaning on them because they're playing well, or they're not, and then you have one of the best lines in hockey you could lean on harder. That's all. So to me, those two things are very related.
Are you saying, like, I'm not saying that Matthews didn't get his ice time in the finals. I'm talking about the defense that they kept trying to manage defense ice time. But when you're looking
I'm saying anyone, though. Your third and fourth line aren't working. Matthews has shown he can play 24, 25 minutes in a game and play 100%. At that level.
So here's another combo that used to go when I was with Chicago. Patrick Kane would come out with the first line, and then if I was on the fourth line that game, or third line, and if I wasn't going, Patrick Kane was coming right back out with the third line. You know what I mean? To create mismatches, to create combinations, create different, you know, especially in the offensive zone. You know, if Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews have been sitting there for five minutes, say if there's a TV timeout and all this is going on, you come back with your third or fourth line for an offensive zone faceoff. Why can't you take off one of those guys? Why can't you take off Kasha or take off these guys or Blackwell to put on these guys to create some offensive zone mismatches possibly, you know? And what Patrick Kane would be told to do is you're only going out for 20 seconds, 30 seconds. If you don't score a goal, get off the ice, send out the next line and or that fourth line forward to fill out the rest of that shift, you know, whether it's coming back in their own zone to kill that last 20 seconds, get the puck out. So yeah, it was just frustrating. It was frustrating. I mean, 2 years ago, I was, Instagramming? Free Spezza?
Yeah, you were.
Like, he was their best forward. They didn't even play him. And I'm not saying Spezza needs 15 minutes, but I'm saying 8 minutes and 4 minutes were the last 4 minutes of the game. Bear Engvall's not going. And even, here's the other thing. If you're looking at your third and fourth line, why is it just third and fourth line? Start to move guys around within that line. I thought Blackwell was moving his feet. Why can't he go in where Pierre Engvall is, right? Let Pierre Engvall sit. Maybe he gets a little angry and like, hey, I got to work a little harder here. And I think Pierre Engvall's a great player. I think their team is great. I think they got a lot of good pieces. I think they can add here and there, but why does it just stay stagnant? It's painful. Put Blackwell there. He played 5 minutes. You're telling me he can't get three more minutes from Pierre Engvall or if Mikheyev? I thought Mikheyev was the most dangerous by far out of them all, but he can't go into that slot to add a little bit of a different element, different shot, different energy. Those are the things. You're just watching. You're like, this is painful. Like, painful.
So you just.
And there's no thinking on the fly. No thinking on the fly.
So, I think a lot of people are with you in terms of the thing that you can change immediately is the head coach. And usually I do think that that's a cheap scapegoat. But yeah, to me, three cracks at the can for a coach that hasn't gotten out of the first round with a team that's this talented, a team that has clearly dealing with some stuff mentally now because they've been just so – like it's 10 times in a row now since 2018 where they haven't been able to close. Everybody knows the stats. But for a killer instinct thing, I think that you're moving off of it and then a lot of the points that you just made right there. But you said something else, which is that wasn't the same Tampa team. And this is the biggest difficulty I have when evaluating the series is I thought Tampa to close that game showed you why they're Tampa. Like, they just knew how to close it out, right? They knew how to win that game, and they finished it off because that's what they do. That's why they're champions. But the entire series, I couldn't shake the feeling of I watched this team the last two cup runs. That was not the team from two cup runs. I wonder what you think, other than Vasilevsky, who was not the guy that was just dominant for those last two. But outside of him, what was the most different about this Tampa team versus the last two iterations to you? Like, why was it not the same?
Well, it's Kucherov, number one. Braden Point, I know he scored the overtime winner, but I just didn't think he was as dangerous as he normally is. They don't come at you as in waves. They didn't sustain ozone pressure consistently. When Tampa's the best, they get the puck in the ozone. They're consistently in there. And Kucherov is dynamic, right? He's playing high energy. He's shooting pucks. He's creating offense all over the ice. So just those combinations for me, their defense is why they won it. Like, you have Hedman playing 26 to 28 minutes a game. You have McDonough, who should have been kicked out of the game for hitting from behind. That was a horrible hit. But he comes in, you know, at 20, 25 minutes a game, depending on the night, and they can just shut you down. Their defense is the only reason, and Vasilevsky in the final two, why they won. Nick Paul as well, but I didn't think their forwards were great. I didn't think the way they came at you was great. They weren't dangerous all the time. They were the odd time, obviously, early on in games, especially the first 10 minutes. But for me, that was like, they would do that for 60 minutes last year and the year before, you know, like, I feel like it was last year's Tampa team. It would have been done in five games personally, you know, if we weren't properly checking or properly coaching. Now this Toronto team has a great team that could take that last year Tampa team to game seven, who knows, right? But I think that comes down to the managing and the way they're played and deployed. But this Tampa team was not even close to what they are.
And I think that adds to the disappointment of not being able to capitalize on a Vasilevsky that didn't have his best, you know, seven games and players not looking their best. And that adds to the upset feeling that a lot of Leaf fans have. But what's it going to be like to be a player this offseason? Like, how do you manage another defeat? And the idea of, like, what are we doing here? Is this insanity doing the same thing every time? Like, how do you find another level of motivation this offseason to actually keep running this back if you're a Matthews, a Marner, a Nylander, a Tavares, or even a Jack Campbell?
Yeah, you just got to get back at it. It's got to be obviously very difficult being in the hardest hockey market in the world to play. And if you lose time and time again, and you could even just see it on them in the third period. You could see it on the fans, not like the fans were, you know, this isn't for the fans sitting at home, but the fans in the building were painful. You know, the millionaires, all them who are too cool to stand up and cheer their team on the entire game.
Painful. Don't say millionaires like you're not a millionaire and like you're not in the club. Like, you're in the millionaires club,
Listen to this, though. It's like,
you're
like
not us.
That, yeah, but the fans at home, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking at the arena, third period. I look at the TV. There's no one in their seats. There's, you know, they're not all in their seats yet. For the start of the third period, Game 7 Stanley Cup, they're still downstairs smoothing. I'm like, this is crazy. It's like when you go to the bar and you're with your 12 friends and your one friend's just cashed in and he's on the phone sitting down thinking he's too cool to stand up. That's when I just go over to him like, get out of here. You're ruining my vibe. You know, they got to send me to the ACC to start kicking them out, you know. Either get in your seat and cheer or just go stay downstairs. They were, like, the fans in there. Every time they panned the fans, they looked like they were crying and it was over. I'm like, stand up and cheer. Did you see the multimillionaires in New York? I'll tell you what, the people that are paying $10,000 a ticket, they were standing up going nuts even though they were down by a goal, cheering their team on, willing them back. Mm-hmm. Toronto, painful. It was painful to watch. And that's for me, it kind of comes back to the team. It was just like, it was like they were defeated before. It was one goal. They were down by one goal. Stand up. Like, stand up the whole third period. You know how much of a difference that could make if you're a player on the bench? But then when you look over and you're like, you look behind, it's the third period. Not everyone's in their seats, and they're trying to play that go Leafs go chant. Barely anyone's chanting. Third period, game seven, down by one goal. Painful. It was horrible. All right. Horrible.
All right. This is where, okay, you can speak to the coaching and the in-game strategy much better than any of us can, right? You played the game, you're a champion, all that stuff. Hey, listen, that's...
Were you there?
No,
was that you snoozing downstairs?
No, first of all, but here's the thing, though. I would have been one of those people that you said that had, like, the dog died, like, completely shell-shocked by the moment thing, because, man, this is where you don't know. It's like, they haven't won a round, Chris, since, like, you and I were in high school. Like, that's so long. How old is your oldest boy now?
Hey, Hawks hadn't won a cup in 49 years.
Sure, but they, like, dude,
49.
The trauma of that many game sevens and the losses of that and the fact that they were behind Tampa and that everybody knew that was a real fan of that team, they needed to stake themselves out to a first goal lead. It's not, listen, I thought the fans actually did great this series compared to years past, and I'm just going to say it. Like, they gave them good lift. They gave good soup chance. Like, the fans were quality. But to expect this traumatized fan base to have to carry those guys over the goal line, they did good,
there
man.
We
they
go.
Were there. At the end of the game, they were loud. They were on their feet. They gave them a little bit of a push. I thought third period they were there. Like, this is too much for me. Like, this fan base has been through too much for now you to blame them for any
Look
part of them
coming
losing
to
again.
Their defense right now.
That's correct, because that's
Stand
the only people I care
seat.
About. Yeah, that's
You're
right.
You're not too cool to sit down on your phone and
I would
and
have been head
day.
In my face, like, or face in my hands, just like chewing my fingernails, because I would have known the misery that was coming for me if they weren't able to do this. Like, I can't. The whole toxic positivity thing with fans is like, it's way too much for me at this point. It's like, Leaf fans are allowed to, like, the one thing we're allowed to have, Chris, is feeling sorry for ourselves because it's been bad. To know that things are gonna bad things are gonna happen. I think that's the one thing we're allowed to have as a fan base. Like, that's it for me. Like, blame the players, blame the coaching, but the fans, the refs, I don't care. Whatever you blame, whatever you want to blame, but I can't have it be the fans. Like, I just cannot have it be the people
who
pay
hard-earned
money to watch another loss.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. I'm not talking to the people at home. I'm not talking. I bet you, I'm talking to the people in the people that were below the building, not in their seats, not standing up for the start of that third period. That was painful. New York, you look at the start of the period, everyone's standing up, they're down, they're going nuts. They're going insane.
They don't even
they
know,
don't
the,
know
rules
the rules.
There.
Exactly. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Stand up. You're not too cool.
Yeah. Not too cool. We got to go. I wish we actually had more time. I have a lot more for you.
You
quickly, you got 1 minute. Elliot Friedman pitched the idea of Mitch Marner moving to center this offseason. Do you think it works?
No.
Do you think there's potential for that? No? Why not?
Quickly, no.
You got 1 minute.
Because he cheats for offense too much, and that's what they need. They need him, just like Patrick Kane, they need him to create offense, and the way to cheat is from the wing. You can't cheat from the center.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good answer. Chris, we'll talk to you later. Enjoy the offseason. I'm sure I'll bring you on again to talk about your Oilers and the Battle of Alberta. Thanks,
yeah,
buddy.
I thought that's
Chris,
what this was about.
Happy birthday to your mom,
hard.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll let her know you said that.
Yeah, that's a nice guy, Blake. I wish her a happy birthday, too, but only after. It doesn't really count the same. Christopher Steak, Stanley Cup champion, thanks for coming on. And again, CEO of the Clever app, which is unbelievably useful for anybody with kids in sports or that's trying to take their game to the next level. We got a run. Today was cathartic in some ways. But yeah, hearing Chris close it out with that energy and that passion, that made me feel a little bit better about the takes. Yeah? Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Subscribe to this podcast.
A lot more to come.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I feel worse about everything now than I did at 5:59 a.m., which I was hoping it would go the other way, but boy, I'm stuck on
provided.
That cap number, something to chew on. Yeah.
We'll see.
Now I'm like, the reason for optimism is maybe you can squeeze your young defenseman on RFA deals.
More tomorrow, and yeah, it'll be text line, so make sure you get
text
them all in.
Tuesday.
Follow JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. We'll talk to you then.